భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ
నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ
నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ
నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ.
We're reading from Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 3, Vishabdhi's appearance. Yesterday we read about the priests were praying to the Lord, and they were a little embarrassed that they had called on the Lord for some reason which wasn't pure devotional service. They wanted that King Navin should have a good son, just like the Lord. And so they mentioned that yesterday. Today is text 14. We did two yesterday. Correct, dear Lord. And last one worships the lotus feet of great devotees. One will be conquered by the illusory energy and his intelligence will be bewildered. Indeed, one who has not been carried away by the waves of material enjoyment. Who has not been carried away by the wheels of material enjoyment, which are like a prison? The illusory energy is unconquerable. No one can see the path of this material energy or tell how it is working. Responsibly, dear Lord, Navi was inclined to perform a great sacrifice for begetting a son. The son might be as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but such a material desire, be it great or insignificant, is brought about by the influence of Mara. A devotee does not at all desire anything for sense gratification. Devotion is therefore explained as devoid of material desires, anyavilasita sunyam. Everyone is subjected to the influence of Maya and entangled in all kinds of material desires, and Maharaj Navi was no exception. Freedom from Maya's influence is possible when one engages in the service of the great devotees, mahacharanam seva. While not worshipping the lotus feet of a great devotee, one cannot be freed from Maya's influence. Srinathan Das Thakur therefore says, Chadiya Vaishnava Seva Nistara Payechi Keva. One has been freed from the Maya's clutches. Who has been freed from Maya's clutches without serving the lotus feet of a Vaishnava? Maya is aparajita, and her influence is also aparajita, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 7:14. This divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. Only a devotee can surpass Maya's great influence. It was no fault on Maharaj Navi's part that he wanted a son. He wanted a son like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the best of all sons. By the association of the Lord's devotees, one no longer desires material opulence. This is confirmed in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagya 22:54. Saru Sangha, Saru Sangha, Sarva Shastra Kaya. Lara Macha Saru Sangha Sarva Siddhi Hari. And in the Madhya 22:55. Mahat Kripa Avina Kona Brat Kamai Bhakti Naya Krishna Bhakti Dure Rahu Samsara Nahi Kai Shaya. If one is serious about escaping Maya's influence and returning home back to Godhead, one must associate with a sadhu. That is the verdict of all scriptures. By the slight association of the divide of a devotee, one can be freed from the clutches of Maya. Without the mercy of a pure devotee, one cannot be freed by any means. Certainly a pure devotee association is necessary in order to obtain the loving service of the Lord. One cannot be freed from Maya's clutches without Sadhu Sangha, the benediction of a great devotee. In Srimad Bhagavatam 7:5:32, Prahlad Maharaj says, Naisham matastavad urukram angviyam spishatya anutarta pagamo yarata Mahiya Sampada Rajo Bisekam Uskinchananam Na Vinita Yavat. One cannot become the Lord's pure devotee without taking the dust of a great devotee on his head. Rajo Bikshekam. A pure devotee is Niskinchana. He has no material desire to enjoy the material world. One has to take shelter of such a pure devotee in order to attain his qualities. The pure devotee is always free from the clutches of Maya and her influence. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This is the process. By some good fortune, we found such a pure devotee, like Srila Prabhupada. So the process is very easy. We simply have to serve him and please him. But knowing how, when he's pleased, that may be a little difficult. It was easy when he was here. He would tell us. He would show us in some very clear way that he was pleased or he wasn't pleased. But now that he's not here, we have to rely on our intuition, on our even our common sense, on our remembrance of what was pleasing to Prabhupada, what was not pleasing to Prabhupada, on his books, on the his tapes and lectures, and so many things are there to help us ascertain what is pleasing to Prabhupada and what is not pleasing to Prabhupada. But we see practically that there's amongst the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, there are very contrary opinions about what would be pleasing to Prabhupada. So we can understand that the, you know, Maya comes in, just like in Bhagavatam says. Yeah. As soon as Krishna left, then Kali entered. This is the tendency. This is because this is Maya's kingdom. So, what to do in such a case? Well, first, the first qualification, of course, we have to be really sincere to try to find out what Prabhupada wants. And we can come together and sincerely pray for to Prabhupada to please direct us individually and collectively, because he was very much concerned about his society, his ISKCON society. Mm. And then we can expect the mercy. We can expect that Srila Prabhupada will direct us if we have that service attitude and that humble prayer to the Lord or to the Srila Prabhupada to guide us. So, what is the difficulty? The difficulty is we're not really humble. And we have malice. Just like these terrorists. They're sincere to try to please Allah. I'm sure they have their sincerity. Otherwise, how could they sacrifice their life? But I know 100% that Allah is not pleased by what they did. So, then we have to examine what is their consciousness. Their consciousness is there's some malice there. Malice means they wish evil on others. So that's one thing we have to be careful when we when we preach, when we go forward in this mission. Because we're dealing with devotees mostly. You know, we're not trying to take over the country dealing with the karmis. Right? But we're dealing with the devotees and how to organize nicely and how to cooperate with pushing on the movement. So it describes how Lord Chaitanya, he was so magnanimous and such a wonderful incarnation, as we were just reading, at Kevala Ananda Bhakta, who's sleeping. He was so, that he was giving freely this process. Simply come, dance, chant. You don't even have to have knowledge. So easy to take this process. But even Lord Chaitanya, although he was the most magnanimous, the more Mahabharanaya, Krishna Pinapadaya, Krishna, Chaitanya, Namanegarat, Vishwena Maha. He was so magnanimous, but even he didn't show his mercy to those who were envious of the Vaishnavas. Those who spoke ill of the Vaishnavas, he didn't give them mercy. So we have to be very careful then when we are going forward how to deal with the other Vaishnavas in a proper way, not to offend them, not to insult them. And this is not easy to do because we're trying to please Srila Prabhupada. We feel very strongly that this is pleasing the Prabhupada, but somebody else has a different idea, and so the natural tendency is to attack them. But we should understand one simple point, that they may be wrong, but if they're sincerely trying to please Srila Prabhupada, that should be the qualification that we should examine to see if they're really trying. If they're sincerely trying to please Srila Prabhupada, then they're right, even if they're wrong. And therefore we have to tolerate We have to wait. We have to be patient and see, okay, I'm sure that this is what Prabhupada wants, and what they're doing is not what Prabhupada wants, but we can't, we have to be patient. We have to be humble. We have to be kind, even. And not like the terrorists, just, you know, if they don't get their way, then they'll kill you or blow you up or something. That's not the process. They should rather see that they're killing people who may also be good Muslims, even, or some kind of devotees. So in that way, we can avoid the danger of, you can say, getting into some politics, some mundane consideration. The tendency is there to bring in the mundane political mentality into the spiritual movement, and to try to put oneself forward. This is the main thing about the politicians. Like when they're canvassing, vote for me. They think, you know, they have to say, I'm the best. And so you should vote for me. Here I am, I'm the best. So that kind of mentality is not welcome in devotional circles. No, nobody thinks like that. No devotee thinks like that, I'm the best. He thinks that I'm trying to serve, humbly serve my superiors. But, I don't have any problem. I was just reading this side in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Lord Chaitanya, Rupa Goswami and Haridas Thakur were staying together because Rupa Goswami also felt himself not qualified to go to the Jagannath Temple. You see, he was associated with the Muslims and he'd taken on the Muslim dress and the Muslim name even. So Haridas Thakur was born in the Muslim family. So they were avoiding the Brahmins. And so Lord Chaitanya used to come there though. There were such pure devotees that Lord Chaitanya used to come there every day to see them. So one day he came, Rupa Goswami was taking his bath, and he saw in the roof, one leaf had been left with a verse that Rupa Goswami had written in one play that he was writing. And it very much captured the mood of Lord Chaitanya. The mood was of Radharani, that when they met in Kurukshetra, how you're the same boy and I'm the same boy, but somehow I'm not feeling the same satisfaction I felt when we were together in Vrindavan. This is Radharani's prayer. Because here there's elephants and opulence and chariots and everything, but in Vrindavan we were just alone in the groves and so on. So Rupa Goswami had written one verse, and Lord Chaitanya was very much pleased with that. So the next day he came and he brought his associates, Ramananda Roy, Sarupa Damodar, some of the most intimate associates. He came there just to glorify Rupa Goswami in front of them. He was testing them in a way also. Because if we strongly glorify somebody in front of other leading people, they may become envious. So Lord Chaitanya was also glorifying them in a sense, because showing that they're not envious. He was speaking in praise of Rupa Goswami like with seven tongues, as I described. And the other devotees were appreciating. And then they obliged him to read this verse. And so, that he had written. But Rupa Goswami didn't speak. He was so humble. He saw that all these superiors are coming, Lord Chaitanya and his intimate associates. He didn't feel that I can talk even in front of these people. They're so superior to me. So at first he didn't speak anything. He just kept his head down and he was very shy. Because he didn't want to, recite his poetry, which was going to be glorified. So then finally, of course, they obliged him to speak something, and Ramananda Roy asked some questions, and so there was an exchange. Just like, don't sleep. You make me want to sleep. If you want to go sleep, go in your room. I'm serious. Otherwise, I lose my enthusiasm. So he was feeling very humble. Now, in other words, that's the point I wanted to make, that even the most exalted devotee, they really think themselves as humble. And therefore, they're ready to wait, to be patient, to see what is the plan of the Lord, not that they force the situation. Those who are not humble, they're so sure that they're right that they force the situation. They fight. And what are they not fighting to please the Lord? They're fighting for what they think is right. They're so, you know. So therefore I say that don't be so sure that you're all right and everyone else is wrong. Even they may be wrong, you may be right, but still, they're right. If their motive is sincere, if they're sincerely trying to please Srila Prabhupada, then we should respect that and give some time. We can present arguments why we think Prabhupada would be more pleased with this situation or this way of going forward. But after all, Prabhupada's not here. I mean, that's the, in one sense, Prabhupada's not here. That's the reality, is we are feeling his absence very strongly. And because of that, so many good men are, you know, gone out of our ranks, so to speak, and are no longer, just like the hard case. I mean, Prabhupada could bring him back in 1 minute if Prabhupada was here. We were just calling. You know that. It's all mental, you know, while people leave. There's no real substance to that. So, if we're going to represent Prabhupada, then we have to also be patient like that and try to, first of all, qualify ourselves. And it's easy to qualify ourselves. There's so many ways that we can become more qualified. By studying, by remembering, learning verses, by, you know, chanting extra round, by taking austerity, just like instead of sleeping, if you stand up, that's an austerity. That was what we were taught in Prabhupada's time. Because people used to sleep right in front of Prabhupada, too. So many times. And he would become annoyed, too. He'd say, stand up. So that's an austerity. Especially in a big crowd of room of people, you have to stand up and, you know, and show that you're falling asleep. And then you have to stand up. That's also an austerity. Rani Kashyapu was performing a severe austerity by standing on one leg for so many thousands of years. But anyway, my point is that should be our first consideration. Qualify yourself. Become pure. And then, you know, the arrangement of the Lord will be there. I mean, Prabhupada was also feeling so frustrated that his spiritual master's movement was broken up. And when opportunity came, he used to preach about that and try to correct them. But he didn't make that his mission. But some people have taken it as the mission to to try to correct others, you know, to try to correct our God brothers. That shouldn't be our mission. Our mission should be to qualify ourselves first of all, and then we can try to help others. And now, therefore, if we do it in that way, in a proper way, then our helping others may have some actual benefit. And that will also depend on the condition. We can't help others who won't accept you know, any advice from us. What to do? What's the use? You give an instruction, good instruction to a fool, they become angry. That verse is there. By argument, you can never convince anybody. By just, you know, by raising your voice and becoming a stronger argument, it doesn't have an effect. People do what they want to do according to the dictates of their conscience. But still, if they're sincere, we can help people. We can help sincere people. And if people who are not sincere, why should we bother to help them? Are any questions?
Sometimes we can see some devotee have good desire or pure intention, but he make many mistakes. He makes many mistakes, and especially when we must, you know, managing or like temple or, you know, some.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult because he can disturb off or this program or, you know, something what we must do.
No, but if they're sincere, like you said, then they'll appreciate that my first business is to cooperate with my authorities. So it'll be easy to correct them, to guide them. If they make a mistake, then you can point out this is a mistake and they can correct it and then they can go forward. If they're sincere, what's the problem? Well, we all make mistakes. But the problem is that we make a mistake, but we deny that we make a mistake. That means we're not sincere. Just like many times, I see somebody sleeping, and if I say, wake up, oh, I'm not sleeping. No, obviously they were sleeping. But the first reaction is to defend. So you tell somebody, don't do it this way. The first reaction will be, so that means that, you know, at least they have to be a little sincere to what they think about it, then they realize and they can improve themselves. Okay, so yesterday I was sleeping in class and the speaker caught me sleeping and I denied that I was sleeping. But actually when I think about it during the day, when I'm chanting my rounds later on, I realize I was sleeping. So tomorrow, I'll be more careful. At least they have that much honesty. Maybe we can allow them to be, you know, immediately defensive and tolerate that. But if they keep making the same mistake and keep doing the same, making the same lie, oh no, I'm not sleeping, then what can you do? Then such people have to be blasted. Or, you know, told them, well, you're not fit to live in the temple. Because we don't want hypocrites living in the temple. This makes everything trouble. Better to have one or two devotees like we have. What about this? If I was one, just like we did in Russia, and everybody would lock the room. When you have two people in the room, lock the room. Otherwise, they have, you know, 15 people that are living in the room, and I would be afraid to live there.
But can somebody have a right, Maharaj, to correct if he sure that somebody made a mistake? He said nobody can make mission to correct another person.
No, but he's saying when he has the authority, that's like he was temple commander, that's what he's thinking about. When he was in Russell, he was temple commander. So he has to engage people in the service during the day. And it's difficult because they make so many mistakes. So then we have to correct them. It's our duty. If we didn't have an organization, we could say, okay, you can do whatever you like. Like, I'm not going and correcting Raisa Shekhar or somebody living in their own house with their right.
But Temple Commander can correct.
He must. Not only can, he must. Otherwise, how will things run? There has to be some discipline. There has to be discipline in any society. Otherwise, nothing will be accomplished. Suppose that we have the Sunday feast is coming. So we need five people to cut vegetables. But nobody says, no, I don't want to cut vegetables, I want to cut the lawn, I want to do this, I want to do it. And there's nobody to cut vegetables. Then there's no Sunday feast. But 300 people are coming to take Sunday feast. And everybody says, well, I feel better to read today. I want to wash my clothes today. What can you do? You have to tell them, no, if you're living in a temple, you have to follow the order of the time. The time president wants a feast. So you have to cut vegetables. That's what brahmachari means. That he accepts that. That's the qualification for living in the temple. He takes a vow of obedience. Just like in the monastery, sometimes they take vow of poverty, vow of obedience, vow of silence even. Isn't it in a Christian monastery? So brahmachari means like that. He's living in the temple, he takes a vow of obedience. He agrees to follow the authority while he's living in the temple. He has to, you know, accept a certain standard. And the standard, the first thing is, you know, you have to get up. Mangalati, like that. That's what, generally, that's the standard Prabhupada gave for all his temple. Everybody should come to Mangalati, chant 16 rounds, follow four regular principles, then they can stay in the temple. Sometimes in Prabhupada's time, they were saying, well, Prabhupada is such and such. I have personal experience. A devotee wrote to Prabhupada. He was a valuable man, intelligent, intellectual. He was the editor of the Bhakti Gautama magazine. His name was Ray Raman in the early days. And he wrote to Prabhupada saying, Prabhupada, I can't follow all four regular principles. I'm willing to no illicit sex, I mean no intoxication, no meat eating, no gambling, but I can't follow no illicit sex. I think I can be the editor of the Bhakti Gautama and do a good job. Prabhupada said, no, you won't help us and you won't help anybody else. He wouldn't let him come back and live in the temple. And when I asked Prabhupada, I saw a letter came from this. I saw a letter from Prabhupada to him. So when I was giving a massage, I asked Prabhupada, because I knew this devotee. I said, you got a letter from Ray Rama or something like that? And I saw it coming and going. And Prabhupada immediately said, see your friend? I said, no, Prabhupada, I knew him from New York. Are you corresponding with him? I said, no. Then I said, well, how is he doing? Prabhupada said, he's gone to hell. Because he wrote back saying, I don't accept you. And since then we haven't seen him. He's gone to hell. He was homosexual.
And Prabhupada
cannot help you. Prabhupada wasn't a magician. He didn't do mystic power. In the nature of bhakti, you have to run it. You have to run. We give the example of the birds flying in formation. The one bird is leading, but the other birds have to also fly. Prabhupada doesn't come back and carry you. That's the wrong idea. They think a guru is like a magic helper, but he can carry you. No, you have to. He can show you the example. This is, Prabhupada was giving a perfect example, perfect teachings. But you have to take it. Otherwise, what does it mean, bhakti? Bhakti means voluntarily, you have to help. You have to want. So this devotee didn't want it anymore. He wanted to listen to it. Many like that, so many. Okay? Mm-hmm. So we have to be careful in our own heart also. When we see that tendency is there, we're attracted to illicit sex, intoxication, something. Then we have to face that and try to root it out and, you know, not be afraid to cry for Krishna for help and to, you know, be willing to undergo some austerity, some extra austerity to try to rid ourselves of those impure desires. This is a process. You know, we have to declare war on Maya, and Maya is in our own mind. Well, it's a little struggle there. In the beginning especially. It's maybe struggle in the beginning, then it becomes easier and easier. Okay. Bhagavatam ki. Jai.